నమస్తే ఫ్రెండ్స్, వెల్కమ్, సుస్వాగతం టు అవర్ వర్డ్స్ ఆఫ్ విజ్డమ్ జ్ఞాన్ గంగా ఆన్ ఆ విరాట్ హిందుస్థాన్ సంఘం సోషల్ మీడియా ఛానల్. ఎవ్రీ సండే ఎట్ 8 PM వీఆర్ బ్యాక్ విత్ ఎపిసోడ్ 186 ఆఫ్ ఆ సిరీస్, అండ్ వీ హ్యావ్ డాక్టర్ సుబ్రహ్మణ్యం స్వామి టుడే టాకింగ్ విత్ అస్ ఆన్ అ వెరీ ఇంట్రెస్టింగ్ టాపిక, విశ్వగురు కన్సెప్ట్స్ అండ్ స్కోప్ ఫర్ ఇండియా. సో విదౌట్ వేస్టింగ్ మచ్ టైమ్, ఐ థ్యాంక్ మై కోహోస్ట్ డాక్టర్ అరవింద్ చతుర్వేది, అవర్ అదర్ కోహోస్ట్ రమేష్ స్వామి ఇస్ ఆన్ అ ఫ్లైట్ అండ్ విల్ బి నాట్ బి ఏబుల్ టు జాయిన్ అస్ విద్ ఇన్ ద టైమ్. అండ్ ఐ ఆల్సో హ్యావ్ టు థ్యాంక్ అవర్ టెక్నికల్ టీమ్ లెడ్ బై ఆశీష్ శెట్టి, తేజస్ నవల్గోల్, స్వామినాథన్, ఈశ్వర్ అయ్యర్, రాకేష్ గడిగి, విశాల్ మెహతా అండ్ అజేష్ నాయర్ ఫర్ మేకింగ్ దిస్ ప్రోగ్రామ్ విత్ బిహైండ్ ద సీన్ హెల్ప్ వీక్ ఆఫ్టర్ వీక్, సో దాట్ వీ కమ్ అవుట్ అట్ షార్ప్ 8 PM ఆన్ సండే to discuss with our viewers important topics with Dr. Subramaniam Swami every week. So with these words, it is over to Dr. Subramaniam Swami to start this discussion on Vishwaguru concept and scope for India. And I thank Arvind Chaturvedi for joining us. Over to Dr. Swami.
Thank you, Jagdish. This is a very important topic. And it has to be understood also. That's why it's even more important that we again and again look at this from different angles so that we fully understand it. We will also do in this program a Hindi discussion in the coming weeks when some more developments take place. And so therefore there have been quite a lot of requests that we should do this in Hindi, and certainly we'll do it in Hindi in the future weeks. I can't say exactly when because we have already booked up so many issues. Now, first of all, I would like to start by saying that the concept of Vishwaguru is nation specific. It is not individual specific. I see a lot of this madness. You see people naming names, people who are in very high political position, is a Vishwaguru. The concept is got nothing to do with an individual. If a nation has a concept, as we have Vasudeva Kutumbakam, that's also a concept. It's connected with the Vishwaguru. And so Vishwaguru is a mindset. A mindset is that the way your mind thinks and works. The mindset of a person who does menial work is different from the mindset who has been a scholar and so on. And that mindset is different from that of a soldier. You know, so mindset is very important. But there is a core mindset, and that is of the nation. And that comes through our education system and our background and so on. So let me say that mindset is what the mind in which you are prone to do certain things. Supposing you see a cow, you are... Your immediate reaction is, no, nobody should kill it. That's a mindset. So like that, many things, we take off our chappals before going into a temple. That's a mindset. So in that situation, I'd like to, for us to understand why India should be a Vishwaguru. Because of the fact that we were a Vishwaguru, by the definitions of Vishwaguru, up till about 1200 AD. 1192, you know that Muhammad Ghori unfurled his flag and decided to rule from Delhi. And that was the point from which we had incessant fights and fights and fights. And finally, the Marathas in 1795, demolished Aurangzeb's army coming from Aurangabad, and Aurangzeb never recovered from that. And therefore, and then Islamic rule in India collapse, literally. It's just here and there something, but there's some Nawab here or there, or the Hyderabad, you know, that sort of thing. But the overall Indian situation, Islam was defeated decisively in 1795. Now, as the Marathas, who had teamed up with people from Kerala and that they're from Andhra, from Gujarat, and so on, they couldn't really bring about a change in our cultural system and bring up a mindset of Vishwaguru because they were so tired. And so in 1815, a completely well-furnished British force came and defeated them in Pune. And after that, the Marathas sort of just faded away. They were really Peshwas who were at that time in the rule and in the command, and it went away. So the British came, and then Macaulay made it very clear that what would be the mindset, what would be our attitude to all these issues. And then this he described by saying that Sanskrit must be wiped out, because he said one library shelf has more knowledge, culture, perspective than all the Sanskrit books that have been written. And he you know, made sure that Sanskrit went away completely from India. And he understood the value of Sanskrit. We didn't understand the... So, therefore, the British rule really struck on our mind. Islamic rule was more physical. Also their habits of carrying away women and then misbehaving them, that sort of thing. You know, they were more physical approaches to our problem. But the British imperialists worked on our brain to make us think like slaves, behave like slaves. And as Macaulay himself said, eating habits will be British. Cutlery will be British, clothes will be British, and only thing is the skin color will be brown. So this would be the new Indian, as he had prescribed. That's why when I make fun of our ministers wearing suit boot and going on foreign meetings and all that, I say they look like waiters, because this is exactly what the British wanted you to do. Dress like them and behave like them and use fork and knives and so on. I'm not saying use your hand, but you can always use your thing. So that all these things are part of your Vishwaguru behavioral requirements. So I would say that the mindset which you have, which becomes known, that is what attracts the people of other countries, leave alone our own people. And I'll show you how in a minute. So remember that if you decide that the nation of India should be a Vishwaguru, there are a lot of things that have to be done. I'll mention all the things that will have to be done. But let me say that Vishwaguru, once you acquire, people will from other countries will start getting attracted to you. Why did so many people from abroad come to India before 1200? I have many times spoken about the Chinese scholar, president of Beijing University, who was invited by Harvard in the 300 years celebration, tricentennial celebration. And he spoke, and his topic was the Indianization of China. And in that, he explained how the Indians, the Hindus, of course, Chinese word for Hindus is Hindu, and that's how India also ultimately came. So, Hindu, he said, were people who mesmerized the people with concepts and purpose perceptions and so on, and that's how the whole of China became Indianized, and therefore he was not in favor of it. He was not proudly saying. He was saying if China has to come up, then it must wipe out this influence of the Hindus. So today when we say that we are a nation known as Hindustan, many people ask me, where did this word come from? Because they say that it's a Sindhu river which the Muslims or the Arabs and so on couldn't pronounce, and they became her, and so Sindhu became Hindu. That's all rubbish. Because in the Vedas, and I can give references if anybody wants it, I'm going to write another book very soon, and I'm going to put that in there. There are slokas which have said very clearly that the nation of India, what they said is from the Himalayas to Hindu Sagar. That is what is our nation, and we take he from Himalaya and Hindu from Hindu Sagar, and the land lying between the he and the Hindu is Hindustan, and the people living there are Hindus. That's how the name came. And all this nonsense keeps on going. I mean, I don't know why it's still, even after 70 years, people are saying, oh, the foreigners gave Aryan, Dravidian, all that absurd nonsense. This is to destroy your Vivek, your Vishwa Guru status. So I would say, then people say, then why you call yourself a Bharat if you are Hindu? I said, listen, again, please concentrate on it. Bharat is used in the constitution as a word for our nation in the context of its what I would call as the structure of your country. So what was Bharat? How did the name Bharat come? There was a king called Bharata. And Bharata was such a noble person that he laid down that the next king need not be my children. It can be someone else, someone more capable, someone more able. If I can find him, I will make him the king, my successor king. And he did. He came to the conclusion none of his sons were worthy of being a king. So that philosophy that you are a ruler doesn't mean that this is your divine right to rule. And it's basically on your ability to make the country prosper. So Bharat, we gave the name Bharat only because of King Bharata. And that is the constitutional definition of India. It's the definition of the people is Hindu. And then the nation in which the area they live in is Hindustan. So let us be very clear, and let us understand that these many other concepts which have been put on our brain, brainwashed us, we must try and get rid of. So now, what happened, as I told you, that after the 12th century, our country began declining because we were being invaded and conquered, first by the Muslims, then by the British. And after 1947, when there should have been a complete overhaul, I must say, to the credit of Mahatma Gandhi, he weakly said this. There were some like Savarkar and so on who said very strongly. But in the end, the person who prevailed was Jawaharlal Nehru, who was already anglicized completely. And so we did not make these changes we should have made. For instance, Sanskrit was our link language. It could have been brought back, so step by step. Devanagari is a script which is used by many languages. Even Tamil, you see, this Tamil script, it resembles the Devanagari script. You write ka, it is like, in Tamil, it is just looking like the Devanagari's ka. And if you want to write ki, you put a matra, just like in Sanskrit. So this is a concept which we should have forced everybody to learn it, or at least told that you have to learn. And people at that time would have accepted it. The advantage is that in the milestones that you have on the roads and railway platforms and so on, one language will one script will explain to everybody, and instead of writing in English and then in Hindi, as they call it, Devanagari Hindi, and then the Tamil or Oriya and so on and so forth. So we missed an opportunity there, because we didn't have the concept that we have to teach the whole world. We have to be an example for the whole world. We had this mindset, we have to learn from the Westerners. And therefore, we will dress like them, behave like them, ate like them, and so on and so forth, which is what Macaulay had wanted. So I can say that when we were in the peak of our period, across the world, people were accepting what we believe in. And in some parts of the world, even today, you can see it. Go to Thailand, go to Sri Lanka, go to Burma, go to Cambodia, go to Vietnam, Laos, So you go to a Muslim country, a so-called Muslim country, Indonesia, you can see even today, and they own it up. Their currency note of 20,000 rupees has Ganesha in it. I have a copy of it. If anyone wants it, I'll take a photograph and put it on Twitter. But they have a they have that veneration, and people say we may be Muslim by religion, but we are Hindus by culture. And so this is precisely what we should have had in India also. So let me get back to these questions. Incidentally, Buddhism, which was Mahayana Buddhism, went as far as Japan, North Korea, South Korea, and all these places. And the only place where Hinayana, which is the older and most stiff and conservative version, was in Sri Lanka and in Thailand. So, but China also, which Hu Shu said is the brainwashing of India, it was actually Mahayana Buddhism, but by then it was almost Sanskrit. And of course, everything was in Sanskrit, and the Chinese scholars all learned Sanskrit. Now I will come to the main question. What should we do to become Vishwaguru? We are not a Vishwaguru today, and there's no individual who can be a Vishwaguru. Please get out of this, out of your mind, and all this psycho fancy and all, please end it. The nation has to be a Vishwaguru, which means that people should learn from us. We can learn also from them, but they must learn from us on many fundamental issues. So when you look at this way, then you find that in the world, already the process has started. Take, for example, 2009 Newsweek. The editor, Miss Miller, she writes an editorial article, and the headline of that is, "Now we are all Hindus." That is about Americans. And there was a furore about it, but she stuck to it. She said, "See, wow, how many things we have adopted. Our modern Americans have adopted that it is more scientific to cremate than bury." And they've given the example of India, where we do it. So she says, why? Because when you bury them, so much land, it gets permanently off the map. We have seen that, many of us, when we come from New York airport to the city of New York, on the way you will see graves and graves and graves. All the, for maybe 300 years, 400 years old, many of them. So, but the whole, pathway is full of grains, of of these people being buried and the thing taken over. So what I would say then for is some examples. I gave you this Newsweek. Now I'll give you another example. Go to Google and type St. James School and Sanskrit. And what does it show? Oh, will come out that the principal is explaining to the correspondent of the from which the Google picked up that thing. The principal says, principal is asked that in your school, which is an elite school, all white school, St. James School in London, in which just now when Charles, Prince Charles was being coronated, they sang shlokas in the thing. They had Christian prayers, but they also had Sanskrit shlokas being sung. And there, when they asked him, we hear that every day in the morning, children in your school of the ages of 6 to 11 are assembled and they recite Sanskrit shlokas for half an hour. Why are you doing this? So he says, the principal says, I do it because I have come to the conclusion after my research that those who recite those Sanskrit shlokas, which is given in the books of India, those who recite them for half an hour every day while they are in school, they will have a far superior brain than anybody else. And therefore, we are not making it compulsory, but increasingly everybody is joining it and we are doing that. So this is there in Google. I'm not, you know, it's not, you don't have to go there. I have been to the St. James School from the outside. I've seen it. And many people I asked, they told me, yes, that's correct. And similarly, we find NASA in its journal, officially published, called Artificial Intelligence. They say that there will come a time when we'll start storing knowledge in Sanskrit. And then the robots will draw from that computer and behave almost like human beings, even on emotions, everything, because they have put all the things in the computer. But he said there is one problem for getting the speaking, the pronunciation. We need a language which the computer can associate with what we print on the keyboard. So they found that, he said that this author in the Journal of Artificial Intelligence of NASA, he says, I think his name is Riggs or something like that. He says that if you type the English words for the memory of the computer, then when the computer starts looking at it, it may say P-U-T is put, but B-U-T is not but, it is but. So in pronunciation, there's no such thing, and the computer will be completely confused. And therefore, artificial intelligence cannot be done on the basis of English. Then they go on ruling out all other country languages. And the NASA concludes there's only one language whose phonetics and pronunciation and alphabets all are the same, and that is Sanskrit. And so Sanskrit is the language of the future in artificial intelligence. Now, what more do you want? I mean, this is... So I would say now, and then you see in America, yoga. There, every town in America has a yoga center. Then they have people who actually are beginning to do yoga in a variety of ways. They are taking to Ayurveda. All these are coming step by step. Pranayama, and I know a lot of white Americans who have now started doing pranayama. So therefore, I'm not. It's the process has started of our becoming a Vishwa Guru. Question is, how can we do it in a way it can be more sharper and quicker? Because then our influence in the world will vastly increase, and we will be able to protect our nation. So what I would say is that, by the way, there are famous people like Julia Roberts, who won an Oscar and all. She's converted herself, her husband, and her children to Hindus, and they still go to temples in California. So ask anybody in California, they will be seeing them. I mean, this kind of thing, there are many that are coming. And whatever you may say, you have a prime minister in Britain who says, I'm a Hindu and nobody's objecting. So Hindu is now becoming a kind of a respectable thing. And because of its science and because of its scriptures and so on, and the logic and the fact that we say all religions lead to God, no other religion says that. That's the most modern concept. So now, therefore, short question, and then I'll conclude because I've taken a lot of your time. What I will say is, what do we need to do? What is it that we need to do now? First of all, in order to attract the world, we must produce innovations. What attracted the world to Britain? Locomotives, Bessemer steel blast furnace for making steel. Then Americans, what has attracted people? Their whole technology. They produce the aeroplane, they produce jet engines, they produce wireless, they produce electricity. All these things happened in the period of 60, 70 years. And America became a wonder for the world, and people started taking America as a Vishwa Guru. But it was all in material level. It was not along, unless you have material and spiritual together, it can't be balanced. And only place in the world where spiritual and material are supposed to go harmoniously is in India. China had copied it briefly in the 21st century, this century, but in the first decade, and then Xi Jinping has completely finished it all off. Hu Jintao was the man. He even refined the ideology by saying harmonious society, harmonious society. There he talked about a balance and a connection between spiritual values. He said spiritual values, and he said, mentioned Buddhism. He didn't mention Hinduism, but he mentioned Buddhism. Well, that's the same thing. And he said materialism and spiritualism, they must be balanced. You must have a bit of both. So that is the core concept of Hindus. So I would say the world looks at an aeroplane and say, oh, the Americans did it. The world looks at computers, and oh, Americans have done it. And people want to go to America to study and so on. So we are capable of doing innovations, but there's no commitment to do that. Homi Bhabha had done a lot of innovations. And in fact, he went to the stage where he had started the process of converting thorium into fissile uranium. And why? Because we don't have uranium. We don't produce fissile uranium. And to depend on your atomic energy development on getting imports of fissile uranium, is in the long run, it's not good for a big nation. So he finally came to this, that thorium is there, and 60% at least of thorium is available to India on the sands of Tamil Nadu and Kerala. And that one is to take it out, and then you can take out thorium, and then thorium will become nuclear fuel. So this is one thing. Now, this is in the 21st century, 20th century, you've got to see it. There are things which the Indians, Hindus to be exact, had discovered, which today people are beginning to say there's something in this. 20 years ago, they all said, this is rubbish and cock and bull story and all that. There was always this question that Rama came back by a plane, Pushpak plane. Now, how did they fly the plane? So I had asked many people, and ultimately one person told me that we had in our ancient times a book called Vimana Shastra. So I said, have you seen it? He said, yes, I know how to get it, but I won't be able to give it to you because I can't keep it for more than 1 or 2 days. It's a very rare manuscript. And in that Vimana Shastra, I asked him only one question. Please find out from that. What was the fuel used by Pushpak Viman? And he came back and told me, mercury. I said, mercury? I mean, I think that was fizz, fizz, fizz on water. I can't believe this. Then I asked aeronautical engineers who are doing research. They said, yes, this is what, 3 years ago. Yes, we are now beginning to look at this aspect, because mercury is a small thing and one drop will generate so much energy, you see. So all these Arabs and everybody will become bankrupt if we develop the thorium, this process, we develop fuel for the vehicles. So I think let me say this way, that we need to do certain things which will attract the whole world and change the world's way of thinking. Some longer term things about the environment and all, you know, that will take a long time. But some things by which, you know, the country, the world's, supposing you can get rid of crude oil and bring in somewhere with huge things. Supposing you bring thorium, we've got 60% of the world's thorium. If you can convert that into fissile uranium, then I'm telling you that the whole world will be coming to you, because it'll be the cheapest available. And today uranium is a very costly thing. So you produce it out of thorium, and all you have to do is dig the sands of Kerala and Tamil Nadu. So first part is this. What will this do? Such things of innovations. If you look at the economics, I mean, I've looked at the economics of America, England, France, Germany, all of them. What is it that made them suddenly become? I mean, America was so bad that in 1636, we have records to show in America that the merchants used to come by boats, ships rather, come all the way to Kanchipuram and park there and buy Indian goods and take it back. Spices, cloths, you know, so many things which they never seen. And they used to come. And some the king of Chola king of Kanchipuram, he asked these people that what is it that we can do for the fact that you are favoring us by buying all this? They said, we bring an empty ship from America, which is from Massachusetts, actually, a place surprisingly called Salem, S-A-L-E-M, like in Tamil Nadu. And that ship comes all the way and empty, buys here, and they pay in gold, of course, and then they went back. So they said, if you can buy something from us, then, you know, life becomes easier. He said, what can I buy? In India, you get everything. That is, in Bharat, you get everything. Or in Stan, you get everything. Or in Hindu, you get everything. Whatever the words he used. He said, I can't buy anything. So when they pressed him, he said, only thing I have never seen in my life is ice. And of course, there is ice in Himalayas, but I have to go all that way. It's not possible for me. Can you bring ice from your country? Because I hear that in your country, ice falls from the sky. What he meant is snow falls from the sky. He says ice falls from the sky. So United States' first export to India was ice cut out from lakes in the Boston area, put sawdust on it, and took it all the way to India to sell it. And this is all on record. It's not something that I heard somewhere. So, therefore, that was the situation. Now, they were fascinated by India producing such lovely cloths, spices, this thing. Same way, if we also go into innovation, can be done. Economic growth also only goes by innovation. Fast growth can only take place, not by more capital and more labor. If you put more capital and more labor, go on putting, then the law of diminishing returns starts. And you will not be able to, slowly everything will shut down. So you have, as in the mathematicians say, instead of going on, on a curve, if you have a curve with the labor here and capital there and production in the curve, and production will go up, and then start tending. But if you have innovation, then that curve will start jumping to new curves. So jumping will mean that you can go on increasing with the same capital and the same labor. And that is called innovation. And that kinds of innovations that I've explained to you, Mercury, supposing we start a research project today and 50 years from now, we produce it, my God, India would be the toast of the town, or toast of the world, I would say. So my view is that it's very important for India to become a Vishwaguru, to have a prosperous economy. And a prosperous economy, I don't have time to, I will have to do a separate thing, a show on this. But I've done it in my book called Reset, where I've told you what is the way we should grow to 10% per year. We must grow for 10% per year for 10 years. Then we'll become a developed country. Everything else is bogus. Otherwise, it'll be like Modi saying, I will double GDP from 2.5 trillion to 5 trillion in 5 years. And that mathematically means 14.8% per year growth rate. And I mean, I laughed at it, and everybody was started saying, you all the time make fun of the Prime Minister. But the fact is that he shouldn't speak without knowing this. 14.8% per year if you want to double your PhD. So therefore, my view is that the only way you can grow fast at 11%, 12%, at most 10%, this 10% growth rate can be achieved if you bring in new innovations, new ways of doing. So for instance, water. We have a shortage of water. You desalinate seawater. For that, you don't even have to invent, because this Israelis, they have got this, and the Arabs are using it. Why we can't use it? All of South India, you can get enough water. And if you connect all these rivers, Godavari and Krishna and so on, then there will be never any shortage anywhere. So much of our water goes into the ocean. Unutilized. So all these things have to be worked out. And if that happens, then of course the agriculture will boom. And you can export abroad. We have got 120 million hectares. Right? Huge, equal to China. China is 3 times bigger than India, but it's only one third that is arable. So therefore, we have got all this potential. After all, we were once upon a sonic chidiya, as the Hindi wallahs will say. Why? Because we have all this and we utilized it. So I would say this, number one. Number two, you must have a strong military and not fibbing like koi aaya nahi, koi gaya nahi. Anyone messes with you, attack him and thrash him. Doesn't matter, it takes 10 years, 5 years, whatever. But you must. If we had done this to the Chinese now, we would be being celebrated. Would have been a member of the United Nations Security Council, permanent member. The whole climate would have changed. And the Americans had to even formed a quad to help you give weapons. The Americans can't give you soldiers. We don't want their soldiers either. But we have enough soldiers. We can get more soldiers from India. There's no problem. But we need superior weapons. And those superior weapons, only the Americans have. And they will only give it to you if you are in a war situation, and that too with a country like China. And so we must become strong military power. And of course, the third thing is education should be given top priority. And we should spend more. You know, how much are you spending on education? It's pathetic. Or 1.2% or something like that of GDP. And this is shocking when a very famous commission on education in 1966 declared that India needs 6% of its GDP in education to prosper. So if you do these, then you will become Vishwa Guru. All these people are telling you Vishwa Guru, they are all idiots, you see. It means you are not going to do anything. If you are already a Vishwa Guru, who's going to go? To say these are the things to become Vishwa Guru, and this is going to do priority one, priority two, priority three. So that India is on that verge. All you need is the right leadership, people educated to know what it means to run an army or run an economy and so on. And that, if we are not a Vishwa Guru today, it's the fault of the leadership so far. Otherwise, right from Jawaharlal Nehru's time to today, we could have done it. And I think we have a much higher population of educated people. They should all start being government arranging for them to be able to do all these activities that we become educated. There's even small things today. Nitin Gadkari has done on roads, what you will not find in most countries of the world. Even the United States, their roads are old, become old. They have been so much used there. But he is doing this. I don't see him inaugurating it, but it doesn't matter. But he has done. He has done, and in Ladakh and in Arunachal, he has done excellent work in the last 2 years to see that our military can move very swiftly. So it's not that we can't do it. We have people who are. Software. What is software? There was a demand from the West, and our senior scientists got it, and they did it. Y2K. If Y2K had not been solved by Indians, the world market would have collapsed because the computer would have got confused. From 1999, it goes to 2000, and 2000 will go to 1900. The computer would have gone back because the only last two digits were being used in computers. So 00 could mean 2000. It could also mean 1900. So how to solve that problem? There's a real havoc was being played by in panic, and still the Indians produced the solution. But, no one has got Bharat Ratna. Amartya Sen can get Bharat Ratna, but not our scientists. So it's in our hands. If you assertive. Make the government, we don't want natak, we want results, we want programs which we can read and make up our mind, we can follow. This is, in substance, what I want to say about.
Thank you, Dr. Swami. Based on some of the questions viewers are asking, they wanted to know when this Mamad Gori's attack took place on India, what was the economical condition of India? Some of our viewers would like to know in terms of GDP and exports and all that, if you are aware, because there is reference to it in your book, but our viewers would like to know in this talk show, what was the economical position of India before Mamad Gori attacked India?
Well, let me put it simply. Till Mohammad Ghori is 1192. Okay. And he came several times. I don't know. Some people say 17 times and all. I don't know. Let's say he came three times. Twice he was defeated. And then he was allowed to go back. The third time, Prithvi Raj's father-in-law, to take revenge, told Mohammad Ghori that you come at 3 a.m. in the morning and you'll find all the soldiers and all will be having a bath. Because our soldiers used to 3 o'clock get up, have a bath and then go. Because we went to battles from morning to evening when the sun set, we used to go back. But Ghori was easy, so the same day he was smashed and then he came and begged mercy. And he was given mercy also. I don't know why we gave him mercy, but Prithvi Raj gave him mercy. So that is an aside. If you plot the GDP per capita, I'm not talking about GDP alone, per capita, from 0 AD to, say, 1900 AD, then you find right up to 1719, India is number one, China is number two. Then the British come and they wreck your agriculture. British went to as salesmen and as marketeers to China, but they did not take over like they took over India. And China then overtook us in agriculture. And soon it overtook us. So till 1780, India was the world's most rich country in terms of GDP and GDP per capita. And then it began declining because the fact that we were blocked off, money was taken away, the British took away $71 trillion, my estimate. And nobody could do anything. You couldn't innovate. You couldn't go to school. You couldn't go to college. You know, they smashed our society. So, the short answer to your question is, we were the world's most developed country till 1780. Rather than Ghori. Ghori was long before that. Ghori was 1192.
Okay, Dr. Swami, another important question is, how will the young population of India help in India becoming a Vishwaguru, whether you have any statistics of the population and how can it contribute? You said innovation, but how will the young population of India help in this process?
Now, let me give you a practical example as an answer. From 1950, when the five-year plan till 1990, when Chandrasekhar government came and then lasted a short time, I was a minister in that, and then Narasimha Rao's government came and I had a minister rank position in that. From 1950 to 1990, our growth rate on GDP was only 3.5% per year. From 90, it started with the bringing economic reforms giving up all these controls and something, and all that was being smashed. It started with Chandrasekhar's time itself, improving our relations with the United States, where we gave them refueling and they gave us a lot of money also. Narasimha Rao came and he just completely removed. And I know it because Manmohan Singh and all were terrified. What will happen if you... He said, no. Nobody needs to ask the government to invest. In the past, before you could start an investment, you asked the government. And on every detail, they will question you and so on. Yeah, total bureaucracy, all removed. So we used to produce only one car, Hindustan. After Narasimha Rao, I mean, today, how many varieties of cars we have? It's entirely due to Narasimha Rao, because he abolished it. So, the way to do it today is by knowing what the essential problem is. Today, the essential problem is there is a weakness in our demand in our economy. And supply relative to demand is quite okay. So the focus should be of our policy on demand. And that means put more money into the hands of the people. One way is to take all these poor people and say, build a road. Now, building a road, print notes in Nasik, and then give it to the workers as their wages, and they will go and buy. And by that means, the demand will go up. Abolish income tax. Where will you get the money? Then what you do is raise the fixed deposit rate to 9% interest. People will come with their savings and put it. These are the imaginary. What the present government doing is makes me laugh. I don't even want to comment on what people come and ask me, what do you think about the cigarette price or some margin price? Something. I said, look, I'm not interested. I'm interested in only four aspects of economic policy, what the objectives are, what is the priority, what is the strategy, and what is the resource mobilization. If you give me these four, I can answer. But otherwise, you know, what do you think of reducing soap prices and toothpaste prices has been hiked? You know, this kind of nonsense that goes on. There's no economic policy today because it's not structured. It's just budget balancing that any bureaucrat can do. So therefore, Miana, so answer to the question is, first of all, we were the most developed country, most prosperous country till 1780. And we lost it because people from abroad came and looted us and put us down and deprived us of doing anything. And as far as our country is concerned, today, the more you liberalize, now, I'm not saying free enterprise. You've got to do policing. They, you know, the critics will suddenly jump on it and the communists will jump on it and say, oh, this man wants to give it all away to industrialists. No, industrialists should become, should also be, should be tackled. I mean, after all, today I am the only one amongst the politicians who's vigorously asking for action against Adani. Others are too frightened to ask for it. So they're keeping quiet. So I would say that I am for an economy where we work according to economic principles. And the economic principles I told you, today we have a demand shortage and a relative surplus excess. And but we must increase both. Must deal with both. Demand, put more money into the hands of the people. Somehow you put it, either by abolishing income tax or printing notes, whatever. Put money in the hands of the people. And if you want money from the people, raise interest rates on which Raghuram Rajan reduced it dramatically to 6%. Raise it to 9%. Even raise it to 12%. You know, if you want to take a loan, for example, in America, the loan interest rate is only 2%. And in India, you can't get a loan for any emergency unless you pay 12% plus another 3% for corruption. So, therefore, these are the things you should focus on.
Harvind?
Yes, Dr. Swami, very nice discussion that we have had so far. I had few questions in mind. First, to begin with, even the word Vishwaguru. We were thinking, where is this word originated from? And I started searching. And of course, many people may have described it differently, but I found it that in 2003, the then RSS chief, Raju Bhaiya, had mentioned for the first time that India is on the verge of becoming global superpower. That means India is likely to be Vishwaguru. Maybe it was forgotten then. But then many people used it, and last few years, or last 2 years at least, this term Vishwaguru has been used in India quite often. And you defined it in the beginning, so to puncture the ambitions of some people who themselves call them Vishwaguru. We have had Swami Vivekananda, we had had Maharishi Aurobindo, or if you call the spiritual leaders, we have had several spiritual leaders from India. And in politics, of course, maybe Mahatma Gandhi as a philosopher, political philosopher, could be taken as Vishwaguru individually. But since you said it is country, I, in fact, you mentioned, but I found out that there are a few factors which help describe a country or a power as Vishwaguru. And first of all is economic power. Second is the military power. Third is the technical, scientific, or education power. You mentioned all these three. Fourth, I think, is the spiritual power, which is as important as the other ones. And when we take a combination of these, we find in some of these, India is leading. In some of these, India is on, let's say, emerging country to be a leader. But in some of these, in fact, one of these, the most important thing is economic power, where India is lagging behind. When we say lagging behind, we claim and we go to town saying that India has become the fifth largest economy in the world. Of course it has. And if you take in PPP terms, it is third largest. It is third largest. But when we look at, when Jagdish had asked this question.
No, stop. Only idiots will use current prices for describing the fifth largest. When I see it, my blood boils, you see. Third largest in the world. But that's not good enough because of the population being so big.
Absolutely. So per capita, in terms of per capita income, even in the nominal thing, we have 145th rank. And if we take GDP in per capita, PPP also, we are slightly better, 126th rank. So when we say economic power is required to be Vishwaguru, India lacks this economic power badly, even if we claim that we have achieved in the last 10 years or last 9 years, whatever we have. Of course, one most important thing is the population. We have the youngest population of the world. And when we have youngest population of the world, again, last few years, we have been talking about this demographic dividend. The workforce which we have is one of the most trained. If we look at the scientific and technological manpower, we have achieved quite a lot. According to, you were mentioning about innovation, according to Global Innovation Index, India was 81 in 2014. Now India has reached a position of 40. And maybe next year it will be within the top 25 technological power in the world. So, and education, of course, you said, we have had a discussion on budget, and that time I was saying, though this year the allocation on the budget has been for education has been one of the highest, 1.12 lakh crores. But you mentioned, and this is reflected in the budget papers also, it's only 2.8% of the GDP. Whereas the national education policy says it should be 6% of the GDP. So in education, we are emerging, but we have lot of distance to cover. In scientific and technological power, we have lot of distance to cover. In population, we have the dividend, but we also have many issues which are actually pulling us back. For example, the infant mortality rate. According to infant mortality rate or the health statistic, we are one of the, beyond 100 in terms of the ranking. So life expectation we have from in the last 70 years of independence, we have almost 1.5 times, but still we are only 125th out of 195 countries. Even in terms of life expectancy, putting together all these things, except the military power, of course, military power, but the UN says we are number 4, or some people say we are number 5, doesn't matter, 4th and 5th, it could still be a leader. But if we combine the other remaining things, education, life expectancy, and economics thing, that is Human Development Index, and the United Nations have been giving this index for quite some time. we are 132 in the rank. And in 2020, we were 131. Last year, we slipped one more rank down. Okay. So, it doesn't augur well for our country to assume the Vishwaguru power. Vishwaguru power, it has to be indicated by these so-called the indicators, which are measured by global manpower. And people who have been giving this ranking to India in certain areas, as I said, we are still emerging, but in most of the areas. So when we have this question, concept and scope for India to be the Vishwaguru, I think we'll have to wait. And you said 10% growth in GDP for 10 years, that will make India an economic superpower. Of course, we have the highest GDP growth, even if we say 6.5% or whatever, we have crossed China. And we are still, last few years, and still we are considered one of the topmost in terms of growth rate. But it is not economic superpower. Growth rate, the nominal ranking will not make India a superpower.
That number of 6% is a bogus number, by the way.
People who were associated with the planning, they have questioned. And when they retired from their position, when they went outside India, then they said this calculation was wrong and it is 2% hike.
Yeah. You know, the one thing I want to ask you, put to you, the easiest thing to do is revise your history books. Why haven't we done it after 9 years?
Yes.
You see, the main problem is the sycophancy of the prime minister that goes on. Nobody tells him the truth. At least if you tell him the truth and he doesn't do it, then we can say that you are a useless fellow. But the fact of the matter is they all were putting butter on him. Mediocre people surround him and tell him all these things. And then they go after all of us through the social media, through paying some people to write all the rubbish. The fact is, easiest thing to do is to change your mindset by telling you the true history. Yes. That we were never defeated. We certainly lost, but we never defeated. We drove away the Muslims. We drove away the, Muslims, those who came from abroad to Mughals. Loot us. Mughals, there are all the other Turks, and so on. All of those chaps. We defeated the British. And the British Empire collapsed all over the world because we defeated the British. And Attlee himself says that it was Subhash Chandra Bose's INA coming back and infecting the whole of India that we said time to go. And we packed up our bags and left. So, all these things should be in the book, no? In the history book. Aryan, Dravidian.
9 years. I add another 6 years of Mr. Atal Bihari Vajpayee. 15 years. Yes, 15 right. years. If we count that, we have taken over and the right type of people have taken over, we are not Nehruvian, we are not blaming 70 years of Nehru or Congress. But then these 15 years were sufficient for you to show that what you have done. And Rajiv Malhotra has written several times, he said in our program also, once he appeared, he said he has written to the government several times that he can volunteer to do it. A committee should be set. Mentioned in your book about the India's identity, but nobody cares. Because if they were to care, 15 years was long enough for them to change their history.
It's like Ganesha and Subramanya. You know that story about going around the world? There was a competition.
Ganesh Parikrama, as it is called.
So, Subramanya went all over the world and came back. Right. And he found the prize had already been given to Ganesh, because Ganesh said, my world is you, to told his father, Shiva. My world is you. So, I've gone around him. So, this is the kind of thing. If you are a psycho fan, you don't have to produce any position papers.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it's not only the writing of history books in India, the kind of contribution some people have had, including you, in Ram Temple or Ram Setu. I mean, cause of Hindutva has been taken by some people who have not been given the due recognition. And there are claimants who have done, they claim that they have done everything, irrespective of whether it is economy, whether it is history, whether it is education, whether it is COVID, fight against COVID or whatever. But so the credit snatching is the game, or credit snatching is the name of the game which people follow.
Okay.
Okay, Arvind.
So we have had almost 70 minutes now. And I didn't know, I didn't think before the program began that this will go into 70 minutes, because normally our norm was about 45 to 50 minutes. And this question, Dr. Swami, will come again and again. Next year, we have the Lok Sabha election, 2024. And people who will be, again, making a claim that they have reformed India, they will be claiming that there are Vishwagurus or Vishwaguru, the Vishwaguru on their side. And which is, again, a false claim. Statistics say something different. I have not talked about unemployment and poverty and the 80 crore people getting food. World Hunger Index, internationally, India is 107th. I don't know what kind of claim they have been talking about in the last 9 years. And of course, unfortunately, in India, the opposition is very weak. The people are not being able to highlight the right kind of statistics to say that this government has been a failure. You are part of the ruling party. You can be blamed. Because the ruling party has not taken your support. Thank you, Dr. Swami. As we were discussing before the program, and I think you had also mentioned during the program, that even for Hindi-speaking population, this program, we will be doing it separately again. In Hindi exclusively, and some people were saying that, you know, let us continue the bilingual mode. No, we will continue in bilingual mode, just to inform our viewers that we have been planning to benefit the Hindi-speaking population, which is quite large in our country, a separate program, a separate series of program on maybe alternative Saturdays. And I think this is the time now we should start. So we will start very soon. Maybe may not be the next Saturday or next Saturday, but maybe certainly before March, we will embark on this mission that we'll have two programs on Saturdays in Hindi and regular programs on Sunday as usual, as we have mostly in English. Thank you, Dr. Swami, for this very important topic and explaining to the people what does Vishwaguru mean and what is the scope for India becoming Vishwaguru. Thanks, Jagdish. For hosting this program. Thanks to the technical team led by Ashish Shetty, Gadgi Rakesh, Ishwar Iyer, Swaminathan, Tejas Naval Gol, Vishal Mehta, and Ajesh Nair. We will be meeting again next Sunday with another topic and Dr. Subramani Swami at 8 p.m. Indian Standard Time. Till then, Namaskar, Jai Hind.
Jai Hind.